Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Servitude, dasya, friendship, sakya, parental affection, vatsalya, and conjugal love, shringara, are the four transcendental mellows, rasas. By the devotees who cherish these four mellows, Lord Krishna is subdued. So what do the devotees do with these four mellows? What's the word Prabhupada used? They cherish them. They cherish them, and when the devotees cherish these rasas, Krishna is subdued. Everybody knows these rasas by heart? Everybody know the rasas? Could you all say them without looking? What are they? Very nice. Which one's missing from this list? Shanta. What is the literal meaning of shanta? Quiet or peaceful equilibrium. Purport. Dasya sa. Oh, wait. First, we should say, what is the context of this verse, if you weren't here yesterday or last week? So the context of this verse is we're talking about why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears. And first, there was a description given of universal time and how Krishna appears once in a day of Brahma. And right after that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears. So Krishna appears and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears, each of them once in a day of Brahma. What do they appear to do? I mean, we know Krishna says, what does he appear to do? Bhagavad Gita 4.7.4.8. Paritranaya sadunam vinashaya tuduskritam dharmastapanar pataya sambhavani yuge yuge. And the other one? Come on, everybody knows this first. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata bhutyanama dharmasya tadatmanam srajamyaham. So Krishna comes to establish, here he's coming to establish dharma, yes. Krishna comes to establish dharma, to destroy vinashaya, to destroy adharma, to save the sadhus, and to destroy the miscreants. So why specifically, in this one day of Lord Brahma, does Krishna come as Krishna? Because Krishna has so many incarnations. Advaita Matyuta Manadi Manantarukam. Why does he come as Krishna and as Lord Chaitanya? So he's coming specifically to establish these rasas. Specifically to establish these rasas, because the full extent of these rasas do not exist in other incarnations to the same extent. So in order to entice the people of the material world to be attracted to developing, to cherishing these rasas, this is why Krishna comes, and this is why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes. Krishna comes to show himself as the shelter of the rasas, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes to teach one how to cherish these rasas. So that's the context in which this verse is spoken. Purport. Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, and Sringara are the transcendental modes of loving service to the Lord. Shantarasa, or the neutral stage, is not mentioned in this verse because there's a child with a tail that just walked out of the room. Okay. Sorry, didn't expect to see a tail walking out of the room. Shantarasa, or the neutral stage, is not mentioned in this verse because although in Shantarasa one considers the absolute truth, the sublime great, one does not go beyond that conception. Shantarasa is a very grand idea for materialistic philosophers, but such idealistic appreciation is only the beginning. It is the lowest among the relationships in the spiritual world. Shantarasa is not given much importance because as soon as there is a slight understanding between the knower and the known, who's the knower? Who's the knower in this context? The living entity, and the known is Krishna. As soon as there is a slight understanding between the knower and the known, active, loving, transcendental reciprocations and exchanges begin. Dasya rasa is the basic relationship between Krishna and his devotees. In other words, all the relationships have that as their foundation. Therefore, this verse considers dasya the first stage of transcendental devotional service. Dasya Sakya Vatsala Shringara Chari Rasa Chari Bhavera Bhakta Yata Krishna Tara Vasha. Servitude, Dasya, friendship, Sakya, parental affection, Vatsalya, and conjugal love, Shringara, are the four transcendental mellows, rasas. By the devotees who cherish these four mellows, Lord Krishna is subdued. So what's the purpose of life? Prabhupada was asked in South America. Why does anything exist? Why is there anything? And what was his answer? Why is there anything? Pleasure. He said, the reason everything exists is for ananda. Right, we can list all of the motivations for which living beings act. We act to get peace. We act to get security. We act to get excitement. We act to get meaning. We act to express ourselves, to have communication, respect, understanding. People have made lists in psychology. But the essence of all of them is pleasure. Why do we want peace? Why do we want security? Why do we want understanding? Why do we want to do something meaningful? Why do we want to express our own individual self? For enjoyment. We want to enjoy. And this is natural. Krishna is the reservoir of all pleasure. And mamaivamso jivaloke, jivabhuta sanatana. We are part of Krishna. Prabhupada often quotes ananda chinmaya rasa. We're all, everything that Krishna has is made out of ananda. And ananda maya bhyasat. As living beings, we are pleasure seeking. I think of it like the weapons that are heat seeking. You know, they shoot them and they find out the engine of the plane. Or they find out the, you know, factory with the boiler. So we're pleasure seeking. We're always looking, where am I going to find pleasure? And we want to find pleasure. We want to find pleasure that's very satisfying, but not that we become satiated. We don't want the kind of pleasure where you say, okay, now I've had enough. I don't want any more. So we want to be fully satisfied, yet able to have more and more and more. And we want the pleasure to increase in quality and in quantity. This is our desire. We want, when we get our perfect new house or our perfect car or our perfect job, our perfect computer, our perfect pair of socks, whatever it is that we get, we want that thing to give us more and more and more pleasure as we use it. In our relationships, we hope that our friendships increase in intimacy and in pleasure. We hope that when we marry someone, we hope that our love expands. We hope that when we're 80, we love them more than we love them when we were 25. Of course, generally, the rasa we taste materially doesn't work like that. Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about three levels of rasa. The first level is that of the senses with the sense objects, physical, just of the body. So in his book, Sudha Bhakti Chintamani, Shivaram Maharaj gives a nice example of the different elements of rasa, which we'll get to in a minute, on the level of just the senses. Then the next level of rasa, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur calls heavenly, which is that of emotions. So I can't have much emotional relationship with an object, a little bit. I can have some emotional relationship with an object, but there's not much reciprocation. It's all one way. And Prabhupada talks here about reciprocations and exchanges. So I may have emotional feelings for my new DVD player, but my new DVD player has no emotional feelings for me. Even between species, it's a little difficult. You know, my emotional feelings for my dog may be very different from my dog's emotional feelings for me. Now, I may attribute human emotions to my dog, but the way my dog is feeling may be quite different than I am interpreting. My dog may just be thinking, here's my source of food. No. And I'm thinking, oh, my dog loves me so much. When I come home from work, you know, my wife is complaining, my children are screaming, but at least the dog loves me. And really all the dog is thinking about, here's my source of, you know, affection and food. But certainly with a material object, there's not really much exchange. Therefore, the rasa with material objects, just between our physical body and material objects, is really unsatisfying. I mean, if that's all you have, it's a very empty life. Although, of course, modern society tells us that this is a great rasa. Buy more. I remember after the Twin Towers were destroyed by those airplanes, so our great American former president, George W. Bush, tells the American people, you know what he told them to do after the towers were destroyed? Yeah, he said, go shopping. That's what he did. He goes, this is the leader of the country, comes in front of the people and says, the way to deal with this tragedy is to shop. So in general, in modern society, they're telling us that the way to achieve the happiness we want is by acquisition of material things. But as we say, there's no exchange there. That's very empty. All right, next thing. Another reason it's empty is that it doesn't touch us. I'm not the body. Najayate mriyate vakadachid nayam bhutva bhavitava anubhuyaha ajo nitya shasvato yam prano nahanyate hanumane shrire. It's not me. So even if I have some kind of apparent exchange, it's not happening with me. It's like if I'm sitting in the car going through a car wash. Do you have those here where you can sit in the car as it goes through the car wash? If you're hot and sweaty working all day and you sit in your car while it goes through the car wash, you're not going to feel refreshed. You know how refreshing it is taking a bath when you're hot and sweaty? I don't know. Does anyone ever get hot and sweaty in London? You have to really work hard at it. So how refreshing it is to take a bath when you're hot and sweaty. But you don't get that refreshment from sitting in your car going through the car wash. Because it's not touching you, it's just touching the car. So in the same way, rasa that's just experienced between our bodily senses and the sense objects, first of all, it's not reciprocal. And second of all, has nothing to do with us. Nothing. We're not actually experiencing it. We're experiencing it by association and by attachment. Oh, my car is getting so nice and clean. So there's some sense of something there. As Krishna says, mental concoction. That sense pleasure is just mental concoction. It's not a direct experience, which is another reason why sense pleasure leaves you very empty. You have a lot of objects. You have just a lot of titillation for the various senses, and you say, is that it? That's it? Wasn't there supposed to be something more? Then the next level, the swarga rasa, that's emotional. And that has to take place between two sentient beings. And that's a lot more complicated than just between the body and the bodily senses and the objects of the senses, because it's involving a whole range of emotion between two beings, and it causes a sense of attachment and also causes a sense of bondage. Now, the problem, of course, with the emotional rasa we have on the material platform is it also doesn't really touch the self. It's between, instead of between my body, which is an inanimate object, actually, as soon as I leave the body, it's inanimate. The body, it's like a car. So the mind is also actually just matter. It's a lot easier to separate our identity from the body than to separate our identity from the mind. We really tend to think that this mind is me. It is not. But it's also between something that's not me and something that's not you. So a relationship happening between my mind and your not mind is not really happening between me and you. I am also, again, an observer. It's not really touching me. And the problem between that, the rasa that happens on the platform of material emotion, is the underlying principle between that rasa is exploitation. Is what about me? I'm thinking to satisfy me. Now, sometimes we have a little bit of an experience of something that approximates spiritual rasa, which is on the platform, as Prabhupada says, the basis is dasya, the platform of service, rather than taking. So sometimes we experience that, especially parents with very young children, where the children are not giving anything back to the parents. You know, a 2-3-month-old baby is not doing anything for the parents at all. There's no question of exploiting. It's only giving. And the happiness the parents feel with the young children is give some idea of this happiness of service. We can have a little bit of an idea. Or sometimes when we do a very altruistic work, when we do some sort of charity work or some sort of giving work, and the pleasure that we feel from that, especially just like in the Bible it says that when you give charity, your left hand shouldn't know what your right hand is doing. And Jesus says you shouldn't proclaim your good works among men. So especially when we give like that, when you give anonymously, you know, when you give in the background, not for any kind of accolades, there's a certain deep sort of satisfaction from that. Just like when I got up this morning to come to the temple, I noticed that my shoes had been cleaned. And I have no way of knowing who cleaned them. You know, I was thinking I should ask all the ladies in the ashram who cleaned my shoes. But there's a lot of satisfaction doing something for somebody when they don't know you did it, isn't it? Isn't there some satisfaction in that? You make a surprise for somebody and they just come and get a surprise and they don't even know who to thank. Your only thanks is them saying, oh, wow, look at my clean shoes. Oh, who cleaned my room? Oh, who left this plate of prasadam here? And you're kind of in the background just saying, oh, it's me. Right? You're just enjoying from the background. Your only happiness is that person's happiness. That's your only happiness. So and that's very sweet, isn't it? There's a real sweetness to that. So we have a little idea in this world of that kind of rasa. A little idea. But generally, our relationships are not like that. Generally, our relationships are, what can you do for me? And I see this all the time because people regularly come to me with relationship problems. And I have yet to hear anybody, maybe once or twice, say, Ormila, my real problem is that I can't do enough service for my wife. Or I just can't figure out how to serve my husband enough. It's always, my husband isn't nice to me. My wife isn't nice to me. My husband isn't treating me the way I want. My wife isn't treating me the way I want. My children aren't treating me the way I want. My parents aren't treating me the way I want. My guru isn't treating me the way I want. The TEL president isn't treating me the way I want. The GBC isn't treating me the way I want. 99.99999% of the time. It's hard for me to even think of. I'm just assuming there's got to be a tenth of a percent sometimes, somewhere, where someone came to me and said, I'm really in anxiety because I can't do enough for this other person. So our relationships are fraught with this me-centeredness, which I want to just say very clearly, you cannot get over that artificially. You cannot have a basically exploitive mentality and go into a relationship in the material world and say, I'm just going to give and I'm not going to care about me. That does not work. Please don't try to do that. It just doesn't work. You'll explode. You'll give, but you're not really giving. It's not genuine. And then eventually you'll go, what about me? I know a family that broke up because the wife took 10 years to have her explosion. And when she had her explosion, there was so much stuff in there that it was irreparable. And the poor husband was like, what happened? You know, I thought she was happy, just giving. So that we can't imitate a higher rasa. But please understand, that's the principle. And therefore, it's, again, unsatisfying. Because savaipam sampuro dharma yato bhakti erhoktaje ahoituki apritiyata yad yatma supersediti. What really satisfies the soul is unconditional giving. It's the only thing that really satisfies the soul. Is unconditional giving. And you can only have unconditional giving when you have the right object for your unconditional giving. You cannot unconditionally give to another jiva from a material platform. And you cannot unconditionally give to your car. You can't do it. It doesn't work. You can unconditionally give to all jivas and all cars once you have that relationship with Krishna. once you have this reciprocation and exchange with Krishna, then you can unconditionally give love to everyone. But you can't start by unconditionally giving love to another jiva or to an object. It doesn't work. And if you don't believe this, we can try it. And we can try it for as long as we like. We can try it for many different conditions. We can try it in the role of a woman to a man. We can try it in the role of a man to a woman. We can try it in the role of a mother to a child, a father to a child, a friend to a friend, an employer to an employee to an employer. In all different bodies, we can try it in an Indian body, in an American body, in a Brazilian body, in a dog body, in a giraffe body, in a whale body, on this planet, on another planet. We can keep trying it over and over. Abrahma bhuvana loka punarvartin arjuna. Mamu pecha tukuntaya punajanmana vidyate. We can go all over the material world trying to have the sort of rasa we're supposed to have with Krishna with all other sorts of living entities and all other kinds of situations and all other kinds of objects until we finally figure out, I don't think this is working. Generally, we think it's not working because I have the wrong object. I have to find a different computer, I have to find a different car, or I have the wrong person, I have to divorce this person, get a different partner, right? Or I've got the wrong material body. Nowadays people change their male body to a female body or female body to a male body. Of course they can't really do that, but apparently they tried to do that. So we think, oh, the wrong circumstances, I have the wrong house, I have the wrong job, I have the wrong country. You know, we think if I just shuffle that stuff, then I'll get it right. But the essential thing is not right. The essential thing is this rasa we want to enjoy, this pleasure we want to enjoy. It's real. We want to enjoy something because it's really something that we are meant to enjoy. It's not the desire to enjoy and the desire to have rasa is not an illusion. The Buddhists and the impersonalists, they say the desire is the problem. So the materialists think, okay, I've got the wrong material object, or I've got the wrong other person, or I've got the wrong circumstance, or I have the wrong instrument. Let me change my body. Let me change my circumstance. Let me change the person. Let me change the object. A little bit more intelligent than that is the jnanis who say, wait a minute, the whole thing is wrong. Just get rid of the desire. If you don't have the desire anymore for pleasure, then you won't care whether you have it or not. Interesting. If you don't have the desire for pleasure, you won't care whether you have it or not. Well, what will you have? Nothing. Zero. Or shanti. You'll have peace. Why, my friends, do we want peace? Why do we want peace? To enjoy it. We don't want peace just for peace. Even if you just say, let's have just shanta, ras. You want it for pleasure. So therefore, right, avasuddha buddhiya, those who think that the solution is get rid of this desire for pleasure, get rid of this desire for rasa, they can't stay on that platform. And sometimes as a lesser form of this renunciation on the materialistic level, it's called bhogatyaga. I open up my heart for rasa with some other living being. I say, okay, I'm going to give. We're going to have an exchange. And what happens every time? I get hurt. I get disappointed. I get disillusioned. We have this word disillusioned. When I joined the Hare Krishna movement, my mother said, but you're so young to be disillusioned. I said, no, mother, that's the whole point of life. Well, we open up our heart and we get hurt. There's pain. And then we say, okay, I renounce. Close the heart, right? We can't stay that way. Then we feel lonely and unfulfilled and miserable. Maybe you can stay that way if you get really, really angry. That's another kind of enjoyment, anger. That's enjoyment by putting poison in the body, just like people enjoy by drinking alcohol. They enjoy by poisoning their body. Anger is an enjoyment by poison. Then again, you open the heart and say, okay, let me try to have rasa again. And again, you get hurt. Again, you close. And you open and close, open and close, open and close, open and close. It's called bhoga tyaga. So the closing of the heart materially is a materialistic form of this gyan. But in actual gyan or actual shantaras, you're not closing the heart. That's not what they're doing. They're clearing out the heart. They're making the heart empty. They're making the heart empty. So when you have false renunciation in this world, which is always temporary, what you're doing is you have all these desires in your heart, you're just closing the door. And the jnanis, they actually open the door and they clean it. And then there's nothing. But that doesn't last either. Nature abhors a vacuum. And again, stuff rushes in because that's our natural state. So our solution in bhakti is quite different. And of course, there's many people in the world who talk about love of God. We're not the only organization in the world, not the only philosophy in the world that talks about love of God. However, our science of love of God is very intricate and deep. If you really want to explore the science of love of God, I suggest you read The Nectar Devotion, and now we have the full Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu translated by Banu Swami with the commentaries of Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And there are many devotees in ISKCON who give seminars on these books. So there's no way that in the remaining few minutes I'm going to cover this anywhere close to adequately. I'm not even going to practically touch it. But we'll just give a little idea. And here Srila Prabhupada, or Krishnadas Kaviraj and then Srila Prabhupada, are speaking about what Prabhupada often refers to as the rasas. Now, technically speaking, these words are not rasas. They're one-fifth of what rasa is. So we're taking one-fifth of what constitutes rasa and calling it rasa as a whole. Just like you might say, this is my body. Well, it is, but it's just part of my body. So we're going to look, first of all, at what constitutes rasa. There's five things in rasa, and I remember this with the acronym SVAVAS, S-V-A-V-S. And this is how I remember these different parts of rasa, if that helps you. We spoke in Soho the other day about techniques of memorization. So the first is what is being discussed here. It's called Staibhav. Stai refers to where you stay, where you start from. Your Staibhav is your essential feeling towards Krishna. You could say the definition of the relationship. This is also called sambandha. Who am I? If I ask anybody here, who are you? You'll define yourself in relation to something or somebody. I am Indian. Well, that's talking about your relationship with a geographical place called India. Or I am Mr. Patel. You're talking about your relationship with your parents. Right? We're talking about, whenever we say, who am I? We're talking about how we identify ourselves in relation. I am a this, I am a that. So Staibhav is like that. So I am Krishna's servant. I am Krishna's friend. I am Krishna's mother. I am Krishna's father. I am Krishna's teacher. I am Krishna's aunt. Some parental relationship. Or I am Krishna's wife. Or I am Krishna's beloved. So that's the Staibhav. And there's another seven Staibhavs, which are subordinate, and they're given different lists. So I'll read two different lists. One is comedy, fear, ghastliness, wonder, compassion, chivalry, and devastation. Another is laughter, astonishment, chivalry, lamentation, anger, ghastliness, and dread. So if my basic feeling towards Krishna is that of a parent, then I feel the kind of affection that a parent or a teacher or an auntie or uncle feels for a child. If my essential relationship is chivalry, then I feel the sense of fighting with Krishna. So it could be, it's friendly fighting. Or ghastliness. Srila Prabhupada, in this connection, I was just listening this morning, spoke about Bhishma Dev. So probably many of you know this story, that Bhishma was a great devotee of Krishna, but circumstantially, by the will of the Lord, he was fighting on the wrong side. He was fighting against Krishna. He was fighting with the bad guys. And Krishna is driving Arjuna's chariot. And the commander of the army in which Bhishma was fighting, Dronacharya, said, I don't think you're really putting out your full strength. You would have killed the Pandava princes by now. And Bhishma said, well, I'll tell you what. I will fight so vigorously tomorrow that either I will kill Arjuna or I will force Krishna to defend Arjuna, because Krishna is driving Arjuna's chariot. And Krishna made a promise, I'm not going to fight in this war. Right before the war, he had said to Arjuna and Duryodhan, one of you can have me and one of you can have my army. Prabhupada talks about Gandhi, how he went to a famous lawyer and asked him to join the cause. And the lawyer said, I'll give you all my money, but I'm not going to stop working personally for the British government. Gandhi said, keep your money, I want you. So that's what Arjuna said to Krishna. He said, keep your army, I want you, even if you're not going to fight. Duryodhan said, why would I want Krishna who doesn't fight? Let me take the army. So Krishna was there with a vow of being a non-combatant, with not taking up any weapon. And Bhishma said, I'm going to make Krishna break his promise, or else I'm going to kill Arjuna. And he fought so severely, he was shooting his arrows at Arjuna, and he was also shooting his arrows at Krishna. Now, Apapavidam, Krishna is explained in the Ishopanishad, he's totally pure, uncontaminated, without veins. Krishna has no veins. Krishna doesn't have bodily organs like we have in our bodily machine in this world. There's no difference between Krishna and his body. It's all spiritual. And yet, apparently, Krishna was wounded and there's blood coming out. And Krishna became so worried that Arjuna would be killed that he went and attacked Bhishma directly. And he had taken a vow not to use weapons, so he didn't use his Sudarshan disc. He picked up a chariot wheel. And one of Krishna's qualities is that he's a very nice dresser. He always makes sure he's dressed properly. Even when he fights with demons. Before he fights with demons, like before he jumped in the lake for Kaliya, he put his curls up in his turban and fixed it and tightened his belt, make sure everything was just perfect. But he was so involved in defending Arjuna that he forgot to fix his clothes and his outer garment fell off. He was covered with dust and he was bleeding. And when he came with this wheel to Bhishma, then Bhishma said, fine, kill me. I surrender. I'm not going to fight you. And Prabhupada said, this is ghastliness. He was enjoying the blood on Krishna's body. And at the time of leaving his body, he said, I remember how we fought in the battlefield and how you rushed toward me with a chariot wheel, wounded by my arrows, having dropped your outer garment on the way. And this was the relationship he's enjoying with Krishna, this ghastliness, chivalry and ghastliness. And Prabhupada said, how can you enjoy this? He said, like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, sometimes between lover and beloved, there may be not just kissing, but biting, but still that's enjoyable. So there's some enjoyment like that. So ghastly humor and anger. Right? One may see Krishna become angry, or one may be astonished, or one may see Krishna